Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Operation Confidence Radio Talk Show, America's Invisible Heroes, with Consuela Mackey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to America's Invisible Heroes, a show dedicated to our veterans and their families. And yes, I'm your host, Consuela Mackey, Executive Director of a grassroots nonprofit organization called Operation Confidence. For those who are new to the show, American Invisible Heroes strives to provide a platform for veterans to be able to share their experiences, heartfelt stories, resources, challenges, and accomplishments. Now, I'd like to introduce you to my wonderful co-host, Air Force veteran and Operation Confidence board member Matt Davison, U.S. Army Reserve and board member Charles Whitehead, our announcer, Brooke Gadaski, she's also a board member. Taylor Marcella, she's a board member and an announcer. And then we have Martha Elaine Barella. She has a women's veterans segment called Lifeline for Women Vets. U.S. Army veteran Richard Cook has a monthly segment called I Was Once Whole. And we have our fabulous attorney, Danielle Surratt. She's also a board member. She has a monthly segment called Veterans and the Legal System. Welcome to you all.
Welcome.
Welcome, everybody.
Welcome.
And welcome, LA Talk Live viewers and listeners. Now, I'd like to turn this over to Charles. Charles, you have something to say about today's wonderful event. What is it?
Today is the U.S. Army's 246th birthday. Happy birthday to the U.S. Army. The U.S. Army was chartered and established on June 14th, 1775 by the Continental Congress. This same date is also Flag Day, which commemorates the adoption of our flag, which occurred on June 14th, 1777. These two great American institutions are celebrated on the same day. Coincidental? Maybe, maybe not. The U.S. Army has been on duty and protecting the United States before we even had a flag or a constitution. When you are saluting the red, white, and blue, you are also honoring the American soldiers and the citizen soldiers of the National Guard and Army Reserves. Hello? Today's soldiers are still on duty, just as so many others have done through the centuries, for 246 years and counting.
Right. Thank you so much. That was wonderful information. Now we're going to turn it over to Matt.
Okay. Today, I would like to ask our listeners to please take action to join the DAV in their support of H.R. 2968, the Military and Veteran Student Loan Relief Act. The caregivers of our nation's disabled veterans have dedicated so much to care for their injured and ill loved ones, often sacrificing or delaying their own career and educational goals to do so. In many cases, when they do seek to advance their education, the high costs are overwhelming, especially for those who lost income in order to take on caregiving responsibilities. H.R. 2968 would help ease the financial burden caregivers face in pursuing their educational goals by including service as a military or veteran caregiver as a public service job, making them eligible for public service loan forgiveness program. This program forgives remaining direct loan balances after an individual has made 120 monthly payments while working for a qualifying employer. This bill will not only help provide much-needed financial relief for caregivers, it will offer well-deserved recognition of the commitment and dedication they have shown by caring for their loved one. DAV Resolution Number 018 supports legislation to improve and provide comprehensive services for the caregivers of severely disabled veterans. Please contact your representatives to request that they co-sponsor H.R. 2968 to provide the nation's military and veteran caregivers with the financial relief that they have earned by fulfilling such a critical role. And I thank you for your support.
Thank you, Matt. As always, you always have some wonderful information. Now we're going to ask Brooke. Take it away, Brooke.
Martha Elena Varela, an Army veteran, was a combat field medic and holds a degree in social work, youth studies, and multicultural studies. She received her MPA from City University, New York, and completed her graduate research at the California Endowment, California's largest private health foundation. Martha is an MPA housing navigation manager at LA Family Housing and hosts a monthly segment called Lifeline for Women Vets. Martha's guest is Army veteran Martha Galarreta. Take it away, Martha.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. Martha was having some difficulty signing in today, and for good reason. We actually celebrated her moving in yesterday. So
really?
Yes, and Martha was in the housing system with the HUD-VASH program. For those of you who may not be aware, the military has housing services available in the form of a what's equivalent to a Section 8 housing voucher specifically for veterans, which is called the HUD-VASH program.
Is she a veteran?
She is a veteran. She is an Army veteran and a native of California. And so after 9 long months of waiting, we had really, really just had to do a lot of praying, a lot of, side conversations to just encourage her to keep going. And so yesterday I had the opportunity to accompany her to the wonderful organization, Patriots and Paws, which is another wonderful resource for all veterans, no matter what branch of service that you have served in. If you are in need of furniture items, small household items, anything that you may need to help either moving into a new place or maybe relocating to a bigger place. We went yesterday to Patriots and Paws and got 2 carloads full of stuff for our veteran. So no towels, rugs, pots and pans, silverware, dishes, cookware, bakeware, plants,
flowers,
curtains, you name it. And so she's painting today and had some difficulty because there isn't Wi-Fi in her new apartment, but she definitely wants to come on the show to talk a little bit about her gratitude and just her appreciation and thankfulness for the veteran community. Much like me, when I arrived to Los Angeles in 2019, I hit a rough patch. And so I was also able to take advantage of some of those housing resources that are available. And what I found out is that there's just many veterans out there who are just not aware. So if there's any veterans that are struggling, whether you have past due rent or any sort of arrears for any bills or your housing costs, or again, if you need some furniture items, please contact us so that we can share that wonderful resource. Or if you're able to get online, you can Google Patriots and Paws. Penny is in charge. Her father was a veteran and is just a heart of gold. She does this whole warehouse full of new and used. So there's some of each for those that, like myself and the other Martha, who are avid thrift store shoppers. We blast yesterday looking through all that stuff. And I know that since I was able to stumble upon that resource, I have also made it a point to share that with about 6 other veterans now that I have helped move in. And I've got just a small caseload of about 3 more vets, 2 that I got to get over to Patriots and Paws, and about 1 or 2 more that still are actively looking for housing. So when we say that, our veterans today really could use that helping hand, that connection from the veteran community, I can attest firsthand to just how important, how influential, and how helpful this is. Because it's different when it's vets helping vets. Vets aren't always willing sometimes when they're in you know, these situations to accept the help. But when it comes from veterans by other veterans, it's a win-win situation every time. So just really excited, busy all day helping her yesterday, and excited to have her come on board here later on to share her wonderful story.
Make sure you get that information so that we can put it on the website as well.
Absolutely. Because
that's some wonderful information that we have to share. And although I'm not a veteran, ladies and gents, but I am a strong supporter of our veterans. And this is the reason why Operation Confidence has our show, is to bring on people such as Martha and all our other phenomenal guests to be able to share resources. I'm just a hairstylist and a fashion designer, but my heart went out to our veterans after I seen many of them living in an encampment in wheelchairs on the streets of Los Angeles. So that's my mission, is why we have our show today and why Operation Confidence is out there advocating for veterans every day, trying to get, and which we will, get housing and resources and job opportunities for our vets. So that's what we're doing. Stay tuned and see what we're doing as well. Huh, Charles? Huh, Matt?
Absolutely.
We're making it happen. Huh, Richard?
Yes.
Aunt Taylor, and that's our lawyer up there at the top there.
Daniel, I got a quick question for you, Martha.
Yes.
You got all of that stuff. You know, did she get to get to sit? Did you get her a kitchen sink as well? I mean, you named everything but the kitchen sink.
Well, and you know, it was just a wonderful thing because the landlord also, his heart goes out to veterans, and he really worked with her to help get her in. Just being patient and you know, thoughtful of, you know, she's also experienced, unfortunately, some recent domestic violence and, you know, just really needed the extra understanding and compassion that this veteran and Downey really showed her. So the place was beautiful, let me tell you. And if the landlord is listening, great job at helping Martha and other vets, because it was just a blessing when we opened that door and saw just that beautiful apartment. And then again, to be able to get all that wonderful stuff from Patriots and Paws, just my heart is full. And this is why I, you know, like Connie, have committed my life to helping vets. And it's just a pleasure being here with all of you. And I love sharing these stories. So thank you guys.
Yeah, Martha's on our team too. She had witnessed something on Friday that was only God can make happen, you know, so. We have some wonderful things coming about, but thank you so much for that information.
You're welcome.
We're going to turn it over now to Taylor. Take it away, Taylor.
Sure, Connie. Richard Cook Sr., a sergeant in the Army, fought for his country for over 30 years. He served across the world in places such as Italy, the Hawaiian Islands, and Haiti. During his service, he managed to build a family and launch a career in entertainment, hosting a weekly radio show while representing models and actors. But Sergeant Cook's greatest battle occurred far after he returned from overseas. Out of the blue, an undetected tumor on his heart caused a massive stroke that required emergency surgery. While Sergeant Cook survived, he suffered substantial brain damage that led to vision loss, body weakness, and aphasia. This marked the beginning of an enlightening journey to beat the odds and rediscover himself. Whether you're a veteran, a stroke survivor, or a lover of great American stories, reading Sergeant Cook's book entitled I Was Once Whole will inspire you to never stop reaching for your goals. Take it away, Richard.
Thank you very much. How's everybody doing?
Good. How are you?
Thank you.
That's good. That's good to hear. I'm doing good. My aphasia is still acting up, but I can get my words out though, okay?
Okay. So tell us about you, my friend. You got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, well, in short, as best as I can, I say as best I can because I tend to talk a lot, but that's because the aphasia makes me talk like that, but I'm trying to just keep it as short as possible. But in short, I have put out that book, which is now on the market to be purchased. All proceeds from the book will go to veterans and stroke survivors. So it's not something I'm collecting, but I'm putting that out for people who are stroke survivors and veterans. And sometimes it could be both, because I work at the VA with a lot of veterans who had strokes, who have aphasia like I do. So I'm doing that. But a few other things have happened as well, too. Okay, would you like to know what those were?
Well, we have this time allotted for you. You got to tell us. I mean, you've done some amazing things after the stroke. I mean, you're an inspiration. Talk about it. Let us hear.
Okay, well, because of my vision loss, I took first
place. How did you get the stroke? Did it have anything to do with you being in the military? Or yes, after you got out?
Oh, that's something I'm still struggling to get approved. Just like how Agent Orange had to go through all the process, I would say this. Back in 1996, the doctors would always check on my blood pressure and also say, your cholesterol is high. But they never put any statins to recommend. So not until the VA did. But I would still have trouble with the doctors. Just, your cholesterol is so high. So the thing is, there was nothing done. And so at that point, it still caught up with me because my cholesterol stayed high. And then that's what the massive stroke happened, because the tumor was part of what was clogging the arteries, causing a stroke. Otherwise, I had statins way back then. So it could have been anything at that point, but it did happen during the time of my active duty.
But you've come out and you're doing some things. Tell us about that as a stroke victim. I mean, you're an inspiration. A lot of individuals that had strokes have just given up. You haven't. What did you do? What have you been doing?
Well, recently, I'm going to start with recent. Recent, I was part of the Creative Arts Festival at the West Los Angeles VA itself, which Creative Arts Festival displays other artists, musical artists, as well as artistic artists in the art form. And so I had entered in photography areas. And so my photography for black and white took first place. And for color photography, that took first place for color photography in what I had done, where I had displayed a black and white photo. And that was called Turbulence. And that was a photo of what I depicted as turbulence. And then the color photo was a golden rose. So putting both those together, technically it all ended up displaying the way I'm able to do things artistically right now, which I couldn't do that 4 years ago. And then also, I took second place for my write-up about the stroke, which they called it an essay. I called it a public speaking event. So I did that. And I took second place on that, like that. So that's kind of what I did. But prior to that, I was part of the Golden Age Games for veterans, and that I took seventh place in the 1600 meter power walk, which technically a person with the massive stroke I had would leave you weak on your left side, but I still did the power walk. So I did that. I was able to do skiing and also surfing through the VA.
Wow, that is so great. You see, I knew that you had a lot to share. Now, a lot of people would give up, but you haven't given up at all. Say you had you were part of the archery team as well?
Oh yeah, I'm including that archery as well too. So I have hitting, even though I'm visually impaired, have been hitting bullseyes.
And have you really?
Yeah, I've been hitting bullseyes. And the thing is, I've been doing that. And they took the area from a certain amount of meters away and put it all the way to the very back. And I still hit those bullseyes.
You go, guy. That is so cool. Wow. And that's amazing. Well, you're doing some great things. Now, tell us a little bit about this book. What's in it? Is it your experiences, your experience that you went through, or what? Real quick.
It's kind of a mini biography of my time in my high school time to joining the Army, during my time in the Army, that led up to a massive stroke. So it still encompasses everything all together, but it still will more emphasize based on the stroke and how I was able to overcome the stroke, especially in the difficulty in speaking, which is the aphasia, which I still have to work on getting my words out. So technically, I'm right now talking, and maybe nobody hears it, but it's still something I'm working through to be able to speak much better, especially when I used to have a radio show back in Hawaii.
I think you've done wonderful. You're doing great. I mean, you're quite an inspiration. And Richard's going to come back on a monthly basis to share more stories and going to have some other stroke victims on and share their stories and be inspiration to those that have gone through it. You have no idea how wonderful it is on what you're doing and how you did it and how you keep it on. You didn't give up.
No, I didn't. I don't give up.
That's what's commendable. You know, I've seen you on Facebook at the gym. You didn't talk about that. Is there any special equipment that you needed at the gym, or you just go for it right at LA Fitness or wherever you are?
Well, it's Planet Fitness, but what I do at the gym, though, is I have to take things not building up muscle, because that's not the difficulty. It's having the brain be able to realize it has to create new pathways. And so the new pathways has to relearn how to be able to do what I need to do with on the muscular side. So it's not muscle, it's the nervous system. So what I do is, in order to do things weight-wise, especially on the left side, is I use about a 5-pound weight to up to about an 8-pound weight. That way it memorizes what pathway that has to do to be able to do the weightlifting on that side. And so same thing for other areas in that aspect as well, too, from the pull down where you're pulling it down like you're
right.
Doing a like you're doing pull-ups. And
right.
So I use that. I use my left side. And then, of course, amongst other areas as well, too, like that. So when you do that, it has the neurons in the body system of the brain realize it has to change the pathways so that way you can physically do things. And so that's what I've done even with my left side, especially for the walking. I use on that a, like I call it in the old days of the Army, a bench press. So it's something like that where I can just put my left leg on there and press the weight. Now, if the weight is too heavy, of course, I adjust it to where it would be just right. So that way I can push on that. So that way the left side will know how what I need to do to be able to do what I need. So from there, the cardiologist checked me out. Of course, not at Planet Fitness, but at the VA, and found that by doing that, I could still do things physically, heart-wise. So my heart is good. And so he gave me the green light to be able to go from walking, jogging, or sprinting. So I can do all that without no difficulty on the heart.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Well, congratulations. I really applaud what you're doing. And you keep up the good work, and we want you back on to share this with others, you know, because that's commendable. Isn't that great, guys? Isn't he amazing?
Keep it up, Rich.
That's right.
All right.
So we're going to turn it over to Charles now to introduce our third guest.
Sure, Connie. Our third guest is Attorney Daniel Sherrod. Attorney Sherrod is a Burbank, California-based corporate law and litigation attorney and a member of the Operation Confidence Board. She currently serves as principal of Pasadena Law Partners and counsel for Rastigar Law Group, a civil rights and wage and hour class action law firm. Attorney Sherrod's monthly segment is entitled Veterans and Legal System. Today, her segment is on the history of African-American military veterans and the military legal system. Take it away, Attorney Sherrod.
Oh, thank you, Charles. Welcome, everyone, to the June 2021 segment of Veterans and the Legal System. I wanted to shift gears a little bit this month to honor the contributions, struggles, and triumphs of African-American veterans. African-Americans have played a critical and defining role in North American military operations since before this nation's inception. In fact, they have a proud legacy of military service that stretches back to the American Revolution and beyond. In spite of this long and distinguished history, these veterans have often borne the burden of engaging with a system of military justice that, in some cases, seemingly prioritizes race over service. With the global reexamination of issues of racial justice in this nation over the past year, has come a similar review of the inequities many Black military members face in the military justice system. A U.S. Government Accountability Office, or GAO, report released last year gives specific voice to these concerns. It concluded that within the military, allegations against Black service members are more than twice as likely to be brought to a court-martial hearing as those against white service members. Although racial disparities in the civilian criminal justice system have long been documented, the government's report raises serious concerns about whether or not Black service personnel can expect equal treatment in military tribunals and other disciplinary venues. The stark realities of facing justice as a Black military member were highlighted by the case of one serviceman 2 years ago. In that case, a Black soldier was court-martialed and later convicted for being six minutes late to a meeting. Such indignities sadly have a history and bring to mind instances of injustice against other Black warfighters. These contemporary stories of military injustice bring to mind historic examples like that of Henry Ossian Flipper. Flipper was the first African-American to graduate from the United States Military Academy at West Point in 1877, earning a commission as a second lieutenant in the United States Army. A forced slave, Flipper would go on to be the first non-white officer to lead the 10th Regiment of the Buffalo Soldiers, where he and his fellow Black comrades in arms served with honor and distinction in the so-called Apache Wars. Now, despite his distinguished service record, Flipper was falsely accused of embezzlement and received the equivalent of a dishonorable discharge in 1882. It took 112 years for his case to undergo a review, resulting in his dismissal being revised to a good conduct discharge. Flipper received a formal pardon from President Bill Clinton in 1999. Sadly, Flipper never lived to see that pardon as he died in 1940. As the years went by, very little changed in the sometimes tense relationship between African Americans and the military system of justice. The disparities in treatment experienced by African Americans were reinforced and exacerbated by the policy of segregating troops by race that was the norm until President Truman's order officially desegregating the armed forces in 1948. Now, 4 years earlier in 1944, the Port Chicago munitions disaster and the racial tensions that followed it would shine a light on the differential treatment of African American servicemen. During the Port Chicago incident, munitions bound for the Pacific Theater of Operations were detonated during a dangerous loading process, killing 320 sailors and injuring some 390 others. Nearly two-thirds of those dead or killed and injured were Black. When unsafe working conditions and staffing practices that often resulted in African American servicemen being assigned to high-risk work continued after the disaster, a number of Port Chicago servicemen refused to continue their munitions loading activities. This ultimately resulted in the sentencing of 50 servicemen, later known as the Port Chicago 50, to 15 years of hard labor and imprisonment. The Port Chicago 50 were all also dishonorably discharged. Like Flipper, some 50 years before, decades of public outrage and scrutiny of the military judicial process finally resulted in the recognition of the injustices faced by the Port Chicago 50 and other African-American sailors at Port Chicago during World War II and thereafter. Now, although the incident and the uproar that it engendered were instrumental to the Navy's desegregation of its forces a short time thereafter, today, 77 years later, the Port Chicago 50 continue to wait for posthumous pardons and exoneration. Now, these are only two historic examples of the challenges faced by certain Black military members as they sought and were sometimes denied justice, both in theaters of operation and other venues. Now, many strides have clearly been made. In 2021, retired four-star U.S. Army General Lloyd James Austin III was confirmed as Secretary of Defense, a retired four-star U.S. Army General, and the first African-American and person of color to hold that office. Secretary Austin has made rooting out racism in the ranks a top priority and has stated that the job of the Pentagon is to, quote, keep America safe from our enemies. But we can't do that if some of those enemies lie within our own ranks. End quote. The 2020 GAO report shines a harsh light on the work to still be done in ensuring the equal treatment of all military personnel as they engage with military courts. It is, however, not the first examination of racial inequities undertaken by the armed forces and other government agencies. In fact, Pentagon studies and reports dating back to 1972 have concluded that racial disparities in many cases are consistent, persistent, and in some cases getting worse. Now, many military insiders have observed that the disparities in discipline are most common among younger troops and young and often inexperienced supervisors. As a first step, the Department of Defense has made a commitment to tracking the data. But another dimension of the problem results from the seeming lack of diversity among higher ranking military officers generally. Some 43% of the 1.3 million men and women on active duty in the United States military are people of color, yet only about 12% are commissioned officers. General Colin Powell was and remains the only Black chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in our nation's history. Although not specific to military justice, the uneven representation of whites and other minorities among military officers Although not specific to military injustice, the uneven representation of whites and other minorities in the ranks of military officers is another barrier to rectifying real and perceived inequities in the military justice system and other areas. As Brandi Baxter, an African-American Air Force veteran, noted in a recent New York Times article, the absence of minorities at the top means the absence of a voice to point to things that should have been addressed a long time ago. Additional challenges are posed by an institutional culture that, according to some reports, increasingly reflects elements of white nationalism and systemic racism. In a 2019 study conducted by Military Times magazine, 36% of those polled and 53% of minority service personnel reported observing examples of white nationalist ideology and racism among their fellow troops. That represented an almost 15% increase over the number of respondents attesting to such during the prior year survey. There are, however, signs of hope. In addition to the Pentagon's commitment to tracking the data of disciplinary disparities based on race, the services are now taking other actions to transform the overall culture and create an equitable environment for all military members. The Air Force has led the way, announcing last year that it would increase the number of full scholarships at historically Black colleges and universities by roughly 60% in a bid to increase the number of Black officers in its ranks. It has also initiated an unconscious bias training program to increase sensitivity to issues of racial inequality, both within the armed forces and society generally. Now, the GAO report was not all bad news. It noted that, with the exception of U.S. Navy personnel, there were no observed differences in the rate at which African-American and white soldiers were discharged or dismissed following a military tribunal conviction. Other statistics, however, suggest that there is still quite a bit of work to be done. A 2017 report authored by Protect Our Defenders found that from 2006 to 2015, Black airmen were 71% more likely to face court-martial or non-judicial punishment than white airmen in an average year. The statistics in the other services bore out in very similar ways. These numbers are staggering, even when compared with disparities in the civilian system of justice. However, with the changes in Department of Defense leadership and an expressed commitment to changing these numbers, hope for greater equity in the interactions of Black service members with the system of military justice finally appears to be on the horizon. Wow. This has been Veterans in the Legal System with Danielle Sherrod. Back to you, Consuela.
Thank you, sweetheart. That was really informative. Thank you so much. Okay, well, we're going to move right on here. We're coming on down to almost the end. We have hot news, Charles.
Hot news. You know, I like to introduce this. This is like the sun with hot sauce on it. You know, hot sauce. You know, it's flavorful hot.
He's so funny.
Today's hot news is Beyond My Battle, virtual support groups, social support while social distancing. Beyond My Battle is a free online support group, an accessible service for the community that needs it now more than ever, I should say. Connecting with others is an important part of caring for other ourselves that not only allows us to talk about things, but feel heard and understood. They offer two types of groups weekly. The first one is illness, disability, virtual support groups. The second is care partner virtual support groups. And those care partners are really needed. You know, they're like husband and wives to some people. They may not be married to their caregiver, but they're very important. Patients and caregivers who manage any kind of illness or disability are welcome. Groups are facilitated and guided by the principles of non-judgment, compassion, and curiosity. All support groups meet virtually on Zoom, just like us. Hello. After signing up for a support group, you will be sent a link to the access Zoom meeting. To contact 2020 Beyond My Battle, their email is to get in contact with them, their email is info@beyondmybattle.org. That's info@beyondmybattle.org. And that's the hot news. Now, maybe I get a little hot sauce on me here from, you know. So take it away, Taylor.
Sorry. Thank you, Gerald. Now it's time to hand it back over to Matt to acknowledge a special American invisible hero.
Last week, we remembered the invasion of Normandy on June 6, 1944, that began the final Allied forces push across Europe to destroy the Nazi regime and end the war in Europe. That battle alone led to 13 Americans ultimately receiving the Medal of Honor, the nation's highest tribute to bravery in the face of the enemy. Army paratrooper Private Joe Gandera of Santa Monica, then a 20-year-old Mexican-American, stands as the lone California among them. His name today graces the Medal of Honor wall at the California Department of Veterans Affairs headquarters in Sacramento. Gandera joined the Army at 18 in February 1943, turning 20 less than 2 months before the invasion. Serving in the 507th Parachute Infantry Division, he parachuted into France on D-Day, touching down east of the amphibious landings at Omaha and Utah beaches. 3 days later, on June 9, 1944, his unit came under extreme fire from the Germans that lasted more than 4 hours. Gandera's Medal of Honor citation reads, Private Gandera voluntarily advanced alone toward the enemy position, firing his machine gun from his hip as he moved forward. He destroyed 3 hostile machine guns before he was fatally wounded. Private Gandera, extraordinary heroism and selflessness at the cost of his own life, above and beyond the call of duty, are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service, reflect great credit upon himself, his unit, and the United States Army, whose birthday we celebrate today.
Thank you so much, Matt. What about our sponsor, Charles? You have us going to show us, talk about our sponsor. We've got a sponsor.
Yes, we have the, you know, the guys from the PVA, the Paralyzed Veterans of America. You know, those guys are, you know, hold on 1 second. Hold on. Those guys are like, you know, I couldn't thank them enough for the things they're doing for, you know, for the members. You know, they're just, there's a lot going on. And, you know, so I'm going to show a video from a song I wrote for them. It's a, look at Taylor. She's all cranked up over there. I ain't even got, you know, I got the head bobbing and everything. It's called, I wrote the song called Downtown Long Beach. So if you get a chance, you know, check it out. It's you can even ask your Alexa. She'll play it for you to play Downtown Long Beach, Charles Whitehead. But I did a spinoff of Downtown Long Beach called for their group, you know. So I'm going to show you that video and stop talking about it.
Yeah, hello.
Give me a second here. All right. You guys see that?
Yeah, we see it.
Long Beach PVA.
Long Beach PVA, California chapter USA. The city by the waterfront, where the veterans work and play. Long Beach PVA, California chapter USA. The city by the waterfront, where the veterans work and play. Long Beach PVA,
Long Beach, Long Beach,
California chapter,
Long Beach, Long Beach,
Long Beach PVA,
Long Beach, Long Beach,
California chapter,
Long Beach, Long Beach.
All right.
And I'd also like to say, when I made that video for them, I wanted to include the people who are deaf, so I have my cousin to do the sign, you know, and that's part of my project. When I do videos, I try to, you know, if I can, have people do the you know, the sign language, because it's important, you know, I want to include everyone. So
that's important.
That's the
second. I'm not gonna let you get off the hook. You know, what about that entertainment segment?
Well, you know, the entertainment part is coming. It's just that, you know, we got all of these great veterans and all of these hot sessions, I should say. You know, it's like, you know, you guys are, you don't want to hear from me, you want to hear from them. But
we want to hear from you too.
I'm coming. You know, it's like, you know, so, you know, Connie wants me to work. I'm kind of like a train, you know, you build it up and get going. You know, she wants to do the marathon. I mean, the 100-yard dash, you know. That's like, you know, we're going to be rolling for a long time, you know, so it's coming.
Yeah, well, I'm an entertainment segment.
Yeah, huh? So.
Because I know your capabilities, and you're just amazing out there, you know. So we want people to see what you do and how you do it, and so on and so forth.
Okay. Well, I'll piece together a nice little what I do video.
There you go.
I'm a songwriter, you know, just songwriter, and of course, I work every day at a rehab facility, Rancho Los Amigos, which I, you know, I owe my, you know, I can never thank them enough, and I'm helping disabled people all the time. So, and I'm a part of several peace groups. I'm a commissioner here in the city of Long Beach, and you know, there's a lot of things. I enjoy life, and I also have I got into the trucking business at the end of last year, and so, you know, people often ask me, well, how do you find the energy to do it? I said, because I'm doing it, I'm having fun. It's not if it wasn't fun for me, I wouldn't do it.
Same here. That's right.
If it's hard
Amazon,
work,
right?
With Amazon, I have a contract with Amazon, and you know, these little things they help. And because of the pandemic, more and more people are buying goods, and you know that freight has to be moved. So, mm-hmm.
Congratulations! I'm real proud of you.
So, you know, I enjoy life. Life is good, and you know, and I also like to one more thing. I also like to tell people, in my lifetime, I've been in 9 different hospitals as an inpatient, 9 different hospitals for car accidents and all kinds of things. And at the end of the day, you know what I tell them? I'm still here. And
that's
I'm
right. Still alive. That's
you know, what I'm blessed. By God has been blessing me throughout the years. And I send my blessings and prayers to everyone else who needs it. Yes.
That's right. Oh, he uses a wheelchair, but that doesn't stop him one bit. That's that Taylor. She's a dynamic one, despite the wheelchair.
Taylor Mark.
That's right. Do some amazing things. So thank you so much. Taylor, did you have anything to share before we start winding down?
I can share
coming
a little.
Back next week with a little bit of something about disabilities in the workplace, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. That's so funny.
They're like she's from the South. And I am from the South.
My whole family is from the South. So it'll come in. And then I work with, you know, military and active duty members. So it's just yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir.
Well, that's
no,
true.
Sir. So yeah, it'll come
out. That's your job position, too. She works for the
Air Force.
Right, Air Force Base. Right. Well, we're going to turn it over to Brooke.
Thanks, Connie. Before Ms. Connie closes, I would like to remind our listeners about our amazing advertisement rates. We have 10-second and 30-second advertisement slots available. Please email info@operationconfidence.org for more information. That email address, info@operationconfidence.org, and visit the Operation Confidence website at www.operationconfidence.org. And go to our resource page for some amazing resources. Taylor?
Also, I would like to inform our viewers and radio listeners about Amazon Smell. When making your next purchase on Amazon, please go to Amazon Smell and type in Operation Confidence in the Choose Your Organization donation box. Amazon will make a small donation to Operation Confidence.
All right. We need all the donations we can get. Thank you so much. Well, as always, we want to remind our listeners that our goal for this show is to raise awareness about Operation Confidence mission, which is to provide stable housing with a wide range of supportive services, including counseling, employment opportunities, and job opportunities. So we want to have anyone that's interested in getting involved with our grassroots efforts to please contact us at info@operationconfidence.org. Send us a message. And also, don't forget to visit our website. I think you'll find it quite interesting. And we want to thank our guests for being on the show today. As always, they have some great information for us. And we're going to be back here again next Sunday from 2 to about 2:50 to have more information for you. And if you want to be on the show, make sure you get to us by going to our website and contacting us at info@operationconfidence.org. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And say goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Thanks for joining.
Bye.
You're listening to Operation Confidence Radio Talk Show, America's Invisible Heroes, with Consuela Mackey, only on LA Talk Radio.